Live from Kakariko Village. Broadcast throughout the Retroverse, transmitted to the real world via a maze of wires connecting the Super Nintendo to a Wii, to a Wi-Fi network, and finally to the Internet. The Techno Funk Boy presents the Retro Zoo Super Show. Here are your hosts, Kai and Steven.
Rolling?
Tape is rolling now.
Do you want to hear the whole thing?
Go for it. I did it! Oh, if you could go home and practice that before the next time.
Yeah,
you come.
I will. I'll harmonize it.
And your family would be like, why do you keep playing Beverly Hills Cop over and over again?
I'll make the orchestral version. Oh, okay. I'm done.
Oh, goodness. Welcome back to the Retro Zoo Super Show.
Thank you. you weren't talking to me.
Well, for you too. But you have actually been in here all week long just playing. What is the name of that song? Is it Axel F?
What? The name of the Beverly Hills Cop theme song?
Yeah.
I have no idea what
it's
called.
I think it's Axel F.
I think the people want to hear it again, though. When you hit a wrong note and it lasts forever?
Yes, the song is called Axel F.
Oh, good. Do the people know what it sounds like? That last part's tricky. We got a drum machine on this thing? We could be here all day.
I do not, thankfully.
That's too bad.
I'll have to get my other synth out. It has a drum machine.
So can we do that? Next time.
Next time. All right. we'll just do a medley of 80s synth pop.
That sounds good to me. Let's get it rolling.
Oh man. Oh, so Dan Gielak is joining us again today. I didn't ask you last time. Is there anything that you want to promote, to send people to make them listen to?
Oh, good heavens.
If you're a saxophone player and you're not following him on Instagram,
yeah,
then you're probably not very good.
Definitely check out my Instagram page. It is my last name, Gielak, except it's got four E's in it because...
I thought that's how you spelled your name.
No, it is not how I spelled my name.
So have I been mispronouncing it every time I go, Gielak?
No, that's how it's pronounced. So there's a bunch of stuff about music and how to practice and different things. It is saxophone specific, but there's a lot of other stuff on there, too, that would be helpful for most people. So, yeah, and periodically I'll put up, like, YouTube videos and other recordings that I'm doing. So, yeah, you can check me out there.
Very cool. All right. So, we are back again talking about Final Fantasy IV. Music.
Mm-hmm.
I asked you how you were doing last time. You have been literally in here all week playing Axel F.
Mm-hmm.
And so nothing much has changed.
Which, fun fact, is in the key of D minor, which is relative minor to F major. Maybe that's why they call it Axel F.
I think that's his name.
Oh, I don't have the sound on. Okay, I'm going to stop hijacking your podcast now.
That's never actually going to be a thing that you do. Yeah, his name is Axel Foley in the... Eddie Murphy's name is Axel Foley.
Oh, really? Okay,
yeah,
that's
so
why
that's
it
where
is.
They got that.
So if his name was Axel D. Minor, then that would make as much sense, but they chose something else. Okay.
I think in that case, that would be like, it'd probably be French for...
Well, they didn't ask me, is all I'm saying.
For Excel de manière.
De mineur.
De mineur.
All right.
Well, this will not be the first time we've alienated all of our French listeners, but nor will it be the last. Mm-hmm. Oh goodness. Okay, so last time, if you didn't check it out, you certainly don't need to listen to last week's episode to figure out what's going on in this week's episode, but you should, because it was great. And we talked about the battle theme from Final Fantasy IV, mm-hmm, and why it's amazing and awesome. This week, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite pieces in the game.
Yeah.
And this is the piece. This is the piece that sets the mood for the game. And so it was, as we're recording this, it's been like really soon after we summarized the game. And so I don't think you've heard it. And so kind of what goes on here is you have the prelude theme, and that enters you into the game. And when you come out of the prelude, you are you're the commander of the Red Wings, which is the airship force for the Kingdom of Baron. And you are standing on the deck of one of these airships, but like all the crew is like really like, why did we just do that? Because that felt really bad. And it flashes back to you're in this town of Mysidia, where you're like slapping around all these people and stealing their crystal.
Sweet.
And
that's a job I want.
Right, yeah. And so then it cuts back to the present when he's on this airship, and you know, Cecil's like, you know, it's like he doesn't want to, like, you know, tell everybody, yeah, that was really crummy of what we did, but at the same time you know that he's feeling it. Mm-hmm. And so he's we get a little exposition about like the monsters are getting stronger in the world, and nobody really knows why quite yet. And then we come in and we land in the Kingdom of Baron, and that's when Cecil does go to the king to express his concerns, and the king demotes him for questioning him and sends him what will essentially be a suicide mission, even though Cecil doesn't know that yet. And so we have this opening that's very, very surprising and very unique amongst these type of games, where you are the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, you are part of the empire, mm-hmm, that must be destroyed. You are a dark knight.
You're a stormtrooper.
Right, yeah.
Well, slightly more advanced than a stormtrooper, but yeah.
Right, yeah. You are from Empire Strikes Back, the officer who's sitting in the cockpit of the AT-AT walker, mm-hmm, and giving commands, yeah, and in the what is it called, the 20 Nights on the Ice is a Long Time song. Do you know this song?
Nope.
Okay, friends, we are going to be back in just a few minutes. Okay, we're back.
That was the magic of radio. That was worth it. That was, yeah, completely worth it.
So, okay, so like, and you know this, the audience doesn't know this. So I went to the Houston Symphony this last week, mm, and they were playing Empire Strikes Back along with the movie. It was incredible. But that whole scene, actually both that and the Yoda scene, mm-hmm, like, I'm just thinking about that song during the whole Hoth thing.
Yeah.
And then when we got to Dagobah, I'm sitting there thinking about the seagulls song.
Stealing your shoes.
Yes. Yeah. And it's like, stupid, bad lip reading. You've ruined my life.
Glorious. Glorious work. You're doing the Lord's work. Bad lip reading. Never stop. Never change.
Yeah. But it surprised me rewatching the movie, how little that officer is actually in the movie, because they really expand his role for the song, because he's like he's the bad guy who tries to rap against Luke Skywalker. And if y'all don't know what we're talking about, I'll put the link in the show notes.
If you guys want to see some rapping Luke Skywalker,
and who doesn't? But yeah, so that, yeah, it's pretty great. So anyways,
back to Detroit Red Wings.
Right, and this is totally appropriate because, like, the two biggest influences on this game,
yeah,
are Star Wars and Lord of the Rings.
Perfect.
And Star Wars is the bigger influence of the two. I mean, the bad guy in this game, Golbez, is basically Darth Vader. And he's very cool like Darth Vader is. But that's the kind of really interesting opening that there's a long cutscene at the beginning.
It opens with story and relatively original story, not a, I'm hanging outside my house and somebody gives me a sword and I go on a quest.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like all the Dragon Quest games start off with, well, I'm the hero foretold by legend and I just got my 16th birthday. Therefore, it's time to go face the Dragon Lord. Yeah. And you start at level one and somebody's, and I'm sitting there, I was like, if they knew that you were like the legendary hero, why couldn't somebody have started training you at 14 instead of like or just
eight?
Yeah, here's a sword at 16. Now go kill our arch nemesis.
No, and all the we're not going to give you any armor. Right. You're going to walk out there with some shoes on, and that's about it.
Right. But this is weird because Cecil at the beginning of the game is level 10, which just makes sense because he's a commander in the frickin' Air Force.
Right.
And so like he has rank and position, and he is actually very far in level. So like everyone you get in the game at the very beginning, it's like when you find Ridian, she's level one. And by this time you're like level 12 and you have to work hard to protect her because you're so much stronger than her.
Characters have a backstory just automatically.
Makes sense, yes. Yeah. That also drives me crazy in Dungeons and Dragons when like, you know, somebody wants to come in, they're playing like an old veteran.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, you know, and I fought in this battle and this battle and this battle. It's like, well, your character sheet says level one. How does that work?
You know? You were worthless in a bunch of battles.
Right. Yeah. You're like protecting the Gatorade boss. Oh, goodness.
Little
Anyways,
drummer boy.
So we're going to be playing the opening song of the game. One of the things that like fascinated me about this song is I bought this book online back in about 96, and it was just a video game music. And it was this guy who had put it together, obviously not on a great system, because when I showed it to you,
I got cancer. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
You immediately said that should be a D sharp, not a C, no, D flat, that not a C sharp, yeah. And I just texted back, dork.
Yeah.
but he sold like a couple, and they immediately shut him down. And so like I don't even know how many copies were sent out, but I found most of them were way beyond my capability.
Yeah.
And it's also I don't know how big his hands were, but they were way beyond what I could stretch. You know, to reach notes.
Well, okay, so you got a piano arrangement and you have a piano reduction. A piano reduction is when you take all the music from, say, a concerto, so you get like an entire orchestra's part, and then you reduce it down into a piano.
Right.
Frequently, they'll write and you'll be playing 12 notes at a time, which, unless you're, you know, a polydactylite, is physically impossible. So, you know, some of these things might not be doable, but that's not really the point. The point is for you to be able to see all the notes at the same time, not necessarily to play all the notes at the same time.
Well, yeah. At least the way it was advertised was these are ways that you can play the piano versions of these songs.
Yeah, if you pick some of the notes and leave some of the other notes out.
Right, yeah. which is what I did. But this song in particular, I was able to learn it, and I was very proud of myself for that. But it has always been one of my favorites, which is one of the reasons I kind of pointed it. I picked it out in the first place, but we should probably
hit it.
Listen to this.
Yeah.
All right. This is the Red Wings. We'll be right back. And then we get into the repeat.
And then it repeats itself. Yep.
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, even now as I'm looking at it again, I'm noticing new things about how it's organized and put together. Yeah, where do you want to start?
Well, let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
I don't know what that actually means.
Start at the very beginning. All right, so without quoting any more musicals, so what we have at the beginning is a series... So there are a series of things called open intervals. An open interval is something, for various music theory reasons, sounds different from, I don't know what the opposite would be, closed interval? I don't know what it would be called. So an octave.
That would be my guess.
Yeah, I'm a music expert. All right, so like an octave, or a perfect octave, a perfect fifth, or a perfect fourth. And I could explain why, but I'm not going to go into it. These, they're neither major nor minor. They have a sense of being open. You get the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's what's happening. At the beginning, we have basically open octaves, a fifth, and a fourth, which makes a power chord, basically,
right,
on the guitar.
This is one of my areas of expertise, mm-hmm, is rock and roll guitar.
Yes.
So power chords are really useful in rock and roll because they're easy to move around, and it's exactly what you were just describing. It's the root and a fifth.
Yeah.
And maybe another root on top of it.
Yeah.
But they don't have major or minor.
Right.
You can move them around. So the most famous progression of power chords that I know of is the riff from Smells Like Teen Spirit, which, if I had my guitar...
I don't know what it is. Yeah.
I'm not by the microphone, but it's F, B flat, A flat... And then
D flat.
All right, so here we go. I get to play an instrument.
Yeah, there
and
it is.
So that those are all power chords.
Yeah.
Rock and roll and grunge especially use those to.
All the time.
Yeah, all the time.
And it's cool because, like, in a power chord, so let's use what they're doing here. Technically, this tune is in the key of G minor, but at the beginning, we get two Gs, a D, and a G. So what you have here, the power chord, is a G and a D. Now, it's technically in G minor because of the key signature, but there's nothing in there to tell you, because I could just add this in the middle, and all of a sudden it's in G major. Or I could add this, and now it's in G minor. It's neither. It's both. It's that. So you could do either one of them. Anyway, we have that. And then when the trumpets come in, what happens at this point is that they start stacking fourths and fifths on top of it. So we end up with a... Let's see here. We've got ourselves a D, a G, a D, a G, a D. And then finally, it changes into a real chord. And even that's not a real chord. It's a chordal harmony, which is just fourths stacked on top of each other. So far, you've had chords without a major or minor. There's no third because there's nothing but fourths, fifths, and octaves, these mm-hmm. open intervals that sound really spacious. And then when you finally get to what you'd consider an actual chord, it isn't a chord. It's just these fourths stacked on top of each other.
Yeah.
And at this point, you're already 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 measures into the tune. And so it's got this big, expansive, overarching, epic sort of feel.
Right.
That's what we've got at the very beginning.
Yeah. And part of kind of the marching of that I noted it is the bass is doing either like just on the beats, G's, or doing triplets in there.
Just this driving forward motion.
Right. Which is kind of mimicked by the snare.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some let's check that out. I think there's some timpani in the back as well. We're going to...
Now, quick question.
Mm-hmm.
The NES had four tracks devoted to sound. How many does the Super NES have?
Eight.
There you go.
Well, even then, the fourth track on the NES was a sound effect track.
Yeah,
and so you had couldn't
three
even play
musical
tones.
Tracks.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the bass and the snare.
Okay.
Cymbal in there.
Cymbal.
I think
marching percussion.
Right. Oh man, those drum rolls are
nice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Extra stuff.
And I wish I could kind of fast forward it. I might edit this down to, because I think the timpani comes in.
Could it be in another track?
In the seven part. Should be right here.
Yeah, timpani. It's interesting. Timpani is a pitched instrument. That doesn't sound pitched to me. Like, I can't make out tones. It just sounds like unpitched higher and lower drums. Still a cool effect, though.
Yeah, yeah, and especially with everything. It sounds a little bit different when it's just stripped down out of that, out of what it is. But it has that feel to it that really kind of that, you know, that marching army imperialistic, you know. Bombastic tone to it.
So you also, I could say this about this bass line. You basically keep a G going the entire time, and so you get these chords and whatever the rest of them are, you know. But that bass line stays underneath it the entire time, so you get this feeling of tension that's just gaining and gaining and gaining as it goes through. It's
right,
a cool effect.
Right.
Hey Drum, did you know that the Techno Funk Boy isn't just a group of podcast hosts that live inside a Super Nintendo?
Really?
That's right, we're also a band.
Tell me more.
We're a retro gaming inspired band that plays covers of classic video game themes, original game music, and other music in the style of classic games.
That sounds great.
Yeah, and you can find our first full-length album on iTunes, Amazon, and CD Baby. It's called The Final Fantasy Mixes, and it's an EDM tribute to some of Uematsu's best musical themes. Check the episode notes for links or go to Techno Funk Boy to learn more.
Techno Funk Boy sounds like the greatest band that has ever existed.
I programmed him to say that.
Hey, this is Phil from Phil's Gaming Emporium, philsgamingemporium.com. All of this talk about Final Fantasy IV, do I have a deal for you? I was going back in my backstock, and I realized that I have a misnumbered Final Fantasy IV game. It is misnumbered as Final Fantasy II, but that is impossible because Final Fantasy II came out before the SNES was even existing. So, it's now your chance to get this highly prized, very, very rare, misnumbered Final Fantasy IV game. It's misnumbered as Final Fantasy II for the low, low price of $3,000. Head on over to philsgamingemporium.com.
Yeah, so one of the things I found that find really interesting about this song, and as I was like looking at the music, you know, it's that first chord. And I don't even besides the key signature,
mm-hmm.
don't really know what it is about it, but it feels like it's a minor.
Yeah.
And I think we're expecting it to be a minor, but when we get to the end of the phrase, it ends on this G major, which is a little bit surprising and also really, really satisfying.
Where does that happen?
Of the,
the Picardy third, here it is. Measure 13. Yep. Measure 13. Yeah, it lands on a G major halfway through. Well, once the melody itself finishes up.
Yeah.
8 bars after the trumpet melody starts, really.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. It's called mode mixture. When you go from a minor chord to a major, so all of a sudden you're in G major, I guess?
Right, yeah.
I don't know, but it's this weird sort of unsettling feeling. You can switch feel, you know. the earth is moving underneath your feet, sort of a feel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a little bit of chromaticism too. You get this. So that's a chromatic scale. And at the same time, you get another one underneath it. So you get this. Or rather, it goes. And then the middle voice drops out, because otherwise you'd have a third, a major third or a minor third, and it would make it a major chord, but it just disappears. So once again, you've got a power chord. There's no major or minor right there.
Right.
It implies that there's going to be a minor third,
mm-hmm.
which may be, your brain might go, it might fill that note in, the dee da da dee.
Right.
Instead of dee da da. Because that's a major third right there. Yeah. So it sounds like it's going to the minor third.
I think you're right. That's
that may be
what it is.
Why you're hearing it as a...
Because you're expecting that note to keep going
keep dropping down,
and
down
not
to
just
land
stay
right at
is.
That moment on a minor third. That's what you're expecting.
Right. And that too has a really cool effect of having, you know, you're starting to get some, you know, some different tones in the middle sections there, but then it comes back down on that really kind of the stripped down fifth.
Yeah. So basically, cool. You end up with this chord progression. So you start with an implied G minor. You end up with this weird chordal harmony. You end up with an E flat major seventh, some sort of an F chord, and then a G major, which is a weird chord progression.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's cool. But it's not in any way, in any sense, typical.
Right, right.
And then he goes into 7-4.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, where did this come from? Beat up, ba da da.
Right, and in that
six and a seven, ba da.
Before we get there, just to remind people, because they, you know, it has been a week.
Yeah.
But chromaticism. That's
yes.
When we're using notes that are not part of the scale we're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're drawing notes from outside the scale to put in there.
So the two terms that you need to know are diatonic and chromatic. Diatonic is chromatic. That's all the notes that exist in that key or in that scale. Chromatic is literally all the notes. So there are more notes in a chromatic scale than there would be in a diatonic scale.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you jump outside of the diatonic scale, so in C major, you have all the white notes, C, D, E, F, all natural. There's no sharps, there's no flats. But then if you start using notes that have, you know, that are using the black keys on the piano, you're stepping outside of your diatonic set, and then you go to chromaticism, chromatic mm-hmm. notes. So, yeah, and he's very doing good. That left and right because he don't care. He does what he want.
Yes. So then it jumps to 7-4. And
I'm Nobuo Uematsu.
And
I'm a writing 7-4.
So behind the scenes.
You can't tell me what to do, Dad.
So behind the scenes, I'm like, oh, my God.
Okay, I'm done. I'm sorry.
So behind the scenes, I'm like sending you this music, and I'm like, I can do what Dan does. And so I start sending you like what I think all the chords are. And I got
75% of them.
It was 60%, but I'll take it.
Okay. You know? It was most.
Yeah, it was
most.
Almost passing.
Yeah.
But I didn't even get to the 7-4 part.
Oh,
and
good heavens, yeah.
And those, but glancing at them.
We talked about this last time. Take a guess. Take a stab at it. Here, I'll play the bass line by itself.
So those are diminished.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you get this.
Right.
It's yeah.
So yeah, we're just to re-explain diminished chords, and we seem to talk about diminished chords pretty much every soundtrack we do, but Uematsu does love them
because they coo. Also, this is very Star Wars. I mean, it's very, very Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. So a diminished chord is, you know, kind of the standard intervals that like everything does everything.
Yeah, it'll go any direction you want. It's if you want a cool little math problem with it. Okay, so you get your major chord. What's that?
You're gonna do math. I'm gonna.
Yeah, well, is it, you wanted me to do this. You wanted me to play Beverly Hills Cop. Those are your choices here.
let's do diminished chords.
We're gonna do some math. Let's all right, math. So here we go. Major chord, hooray. Minor chord, diminished chord. So here's what's going on. When you've got a major chord, you've got four half steps between your first and third. The third is the second note in the chord. It comes from the third note of the scale. You don't need to know that. Then there's a major chord or major third between the first two notes and a minor third between the second and the second two notes of the chord. What happens when you do a minor chord is you switch those around. So there's a minor third and a major third. But when you do a diminished chord, you get a minor third and another minor third. Most of the time, diminished chords have four notes in them, so you stack another minor third on top of that, and now you've got minor third, minor third, minor third, and if you do another minor third, you end up at the note that you started with. So it's a perfectly symmetrical chord, which happens less in music than you'd expect. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, music, when it's stacked together, chords and scales and etc., they're asymmetrical. So the diminished chord is perfectly symmetrical. And partially because of that, you could change from that chord to like any other key, not any, but like lots and lots of other keys. It's very flexible. It's got great utility, I guess you'd say.
Right. Right. And it also has like this enormous amount of tension.
Yeah, absolutely.
Built into it.
Yeah.
Because it's got that tone that's sitting, it's actually sitting perfectly in between the two tones that we're expecting out of the scale, mm-hmm. the fourth and the fifth.
Yeah.
But it's.
Lots of dissonance.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he just, he bangs away at those pretty good and just moves those around.
Yep.
And when we say 7-4, we're going from having four beats per measure, just, yep. you know, kind of your standard 1-2-3-4. But this actually has seven. And so, you know, kind of when we're listening to it, it has the effect of dropping back to... you know, to the one sooner than we're expecting.
Yeah, it's unexpected. Bum bum ba da dum ba da da dum ba dum. That's what you're expecting.
Right.
It's ba dum ba da dum ba da da dum da 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 da. Like, here it is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, surprise.
Right. Yeah. And you know, if I were going to apply that to, you know, to literally analyze that according to the story,
uh-huh.
it's really interesting because the rest of the song is a military march.
Uh-huh.
And then you have something that is not...
There's falling out of step.
Yeah.
They're falling out of step.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's a...
Foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing, yes. So that is Red Wings.
Yeah. Actually, you know what's funny when I'm looking at this?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to love this. The entire 7-4 part, which starts from measure 17 and goes all the way to the end, which is the repeat, it's nothing but diminished chords.
It's one diminished chord.
The entire thing. So basically you get power chords at the beginning, which is neither major nor minor nor nothing. Then you got a bunch of kooky chords in the middle. And then you get a diminished chord that's played in a bunch of different ways for like five measures. So...
Right. Right. And putting a lot of that stuff like side by side, like, I mean, at the end of the main phrase, mm-hmm. we're going to like the major version of our root chord.
Yeah.
And that with the military beat on top, below it, it has a little bit of a heroic feel to it. It's like, you know, yes, these are great soldiers returning from battle.
Yeah.
And then it jumps to, no, we're going to mess with the rhythm. Now we're going to mess with the chords and bang away diminished chords. And putting those side by side is kind of jarring, intentionally jarring. And,
you know who did all this stuff earlier? Shostakovich.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everything we'd like this constant deem dicky doom, this underneath
right,
sort
yeah.
of drone pitch, the weird chromaticism, the sarcastic major, Shostakovich. He's done all of these techniques. Don't know why anybody needed to know that. Just fun fact.
Didn't you, in one of the previous episodes, I don't think you mentioned Shostakovich.
Quite possibly. It's pretty dope. That stuff is great.
That was actually an early review of some of that music. It's
This shiz is dope.
Yes.
The Pravda. Right. The Daily Pravda.
Yeah, gosh. Okay. So, if we're done with that song.
Yes.
I want to play this is not one that I ask you to really look at, but this goes into when you land and now we have the Kingdom of Baron theme. And so we're carrying over a lot of what we've already established here, mm-hmm. as far as like the marching beat and stuff. But so that the Red Wing song goes immediately into Baron, which is this. Okay, so this does not do a lot of the jarring that Red Wings did. And one of the reasons is like, okay, so this is the capital of the empire, but this is also Cecil's home, mm-hmm. and it will be the town he returns to at the end of the game victorious. And so I think it's probably a lot more than of what we expect from kind of a military imperial town.
Yeah.
You know, with some nice blasting trumpets.
And, that's what we need.
And some marching snare drums in the background.
Trumpets and drums, the most warlike of all possible instruments.
Absolutely. And I also noticed it kind of kept that bass pedal tone.
Yep.
Through most of the cycle.
Yep.
That we established.
They got the military tattoo in the snare. Chit, 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 chit. Yeah. Just constant. Yeah.
Right. So the effect it has on the game itself is it kind of carries the baggage with it of Red Wings.
Yeah.
As you're coming in and, you know, now you are a returning soldier. You've stolen the crystal from thine enemies and and you're handing it over. But it still has that feeling of things aren't right because of everything that happened before.
Yeah, it's not direct conflict, but it's minor, and there's still like a sense of something being wrong. Mm-hmm. But it's not so much like a direct conflict that's happening right then and there. It's more understated.
Yeah, and one of the cool things about the song is when we next hear it is when Cecil returns mm-hmm. after going through a lot, and he's returning not as like this scummy. Commander that has beat up these defenseless people and stolen their stuff, but he's actually coming back as a conqueror.
Okay.
And he's going to set things right.
So the theme transforms?
No, it's the same theme.
It's the same exact theme.
Right. Yeah. It feels like to me kind of divorced from the context of the Red Wings. It brings out more of those kind of returning hero type of elements.
Is the track changed in any way?
I don't believe so.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. So
he plays with that stuff more in Final Fantasy VI, but he has Uematsu has not reached that point.
Okay.
Yet, that he's like doing like these subtle changes and stuff. Yeah. He will when we get to Final Fantasy VI, which is notoriously, and this just annoys the snot out of me. Is that when they released this soundtrack, it wasn't quite enough for two discs. And so they crammed it onto one.
Yeah.
And they just they only had the songs repeat only cycle once instead of cycle twice, which is what they normally do.
Yeah.
And some songs like the Prelude, they don't even let cycle completely. They
all the way through. Yeah, it finishes before it's done.
Yeah. But when we get to Final Fantasy VI, that is three full discs, each one of them 60 minutes long. And
I wonder if at that point Uematsu is just putting his foot down. He's like, no, you guys can't do this again. There's too much of this game is devoted to soundtrack. We need to do it proper.
Well, and he had the advantage of being recognized very quickly for the contribution he was making.
Yeah.
I mean, when games like this came out, it's like this, the soundtrack to this game is just head and shoulders above anything else that was coming out at the time. And so, yeah, as they seem to give him more freedom, until we literally get to six and they're probably sitting over him going, so it's kind of Opry, right? Why don't we make the player pause the game for five minutes and listen to your opera and do nothing else? And that's what you do in the game.
Yeah,
it's just the game stops.
5 minute cutscene where you watch an opera.
Right. And so like they do this kind of annoying thing that's like, well, we gotta have them do something, and so your character is singing the opera, and so you have to pick the right next line, and one of them's obviously wrong, so it's not even like a difficult thing.
Give me a break.
But it's just, it really is. It's like, guys, y'all have to just stop, pause the game for a minute and listen to this because it's amazing.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, the opera scene just became one of everyone's favorite scenes.
Yeah.
And you don't expect that in a video game, but Uematsu had that kind of pull.
It's pretty cool. I mean, and also it's one of those things where you take a risk and you step outside of what was standard. I mean, part of the thing is that there was nothing standard at the time. There were very few tropes, video game tropes at that time. They were making stuff up, which
makes, I mean,
the artistic integrity of that is great. I mean, because that could have been a disaster. I mean, why would on earth would you distract your players from playing a game for 5 minutes? You know, but they did, and it proved to be a success. It was a well taken risk.
Right. Yeah. And one of the advantages that they had back then that they don't have now is being able to really surprise people with elements of music.
Yeah.
Like in this game, when the prelude starts and you're comfortable and like, I know this, this is what we've been playing for three games. And then the strings just hit you and you're like, Oh, this is bigger than I thought.
Yep.
But he does that again in Final Fantasy VII, where the whole game, you have a very, very, very good soundtrack and it's very industrial and it's very, very cool. And you get to the last battle and a couple of minutes into the song, all of a sudden a choir starts singing.
Mm.
And you've never heard a choir sing in a Final Fantasy game before. And when that hits you, and you've been playing this game for 60 hours to get to that point, and when that hits you, it sent shivers up my spine.
Kick it up a notch,
Right. That's and cool. Just being able to do stuff like that,
Can you imagine the self-control it would take for him to just sit on that?
Yeah.
For like, oh, I can do this, but I'm not going to do it yet. Not yet. Not yet. And then I'm just going to put it in right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then after that, once they've established that, then they start putting actual song. They would put a song into the game each time, or have somebody humming and having voices. But yeah, that game in particular, he just had that in his back pocket the entire time. And it's like, this song's pretty good, huh? Bam.
Wait until it gets better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that song's awesome. Really trippy. I'm gonna have to, if you don't know One Winged Angel, I'm gonna have to play it for you. Cause
I've got a fun story. Mm-hmm. So my wife, is a violinist.
Oh yeah.
And she played for Uematsu in one of his tours, in Singapore, and they sold out all the concerts, and the demand was so great that they opened up, I think, another two nights and sold those out too.
Oh gosh, wow.
And then at, like, you know, one of the final concerts they were playing, and like it was getting quiet, and like they were like getting ready to start another tune or something like that, or they were closing up or something, and somebody from the back balcony yells, "One Winged Angel!" like that. And sure enough, there it is, and everybody loves it. I mean, that's like the tune. I mean, that may be Umatsu's biggest
hit. It is. You know? And he has said that they can't do a concert without that song.
Yeah.
They could cut pretty much any other tune.
Yeah.
Not that one.
Yeah.
And and it's so good. The way he composed that was really weird too. And he decided that he was going to compose each segment completely separate from the rest of the song.
That's strange.
And then mashed them together. And that it has like a jolting effect.
Normally a terrible idea.
Normally is, yes. But it works.
And, all right, cool.
That had a massively great effect on that soundtrack.
Yeah.
And so
nice.
Yeah. So this was Final Fantasy IV.
Yep.
So now if you go back and listen to the previous two episodes, we go through the entire plot.
Mm-hmm.
And Steven was not in those episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And
because he's a loser.
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he listened to it, and he was like, "Man, I was totally lost the entire time."
So. What?
Yeah, he got lost in trying to explain. There are a lot of characters, and it is a little bit like trying to explain, you know, a Lord of the Rings Star Wars mashup in 2 hours
using an audio only format.
Audio only.
Yeah.
Right. Oh man. So
well, at least now we have diminished chords, which will set the mood a little bit better.
Yes.
I think our listeners understand now. They understand all they need to know.
Oh goodness. Well, I do appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
And we will link to your Instagram.
Please do.
And your great video, Cowbell.
Yep.
In the show notes. And also the Bad Lip Reading Hostels in the Hill. Hostels, whatever it was. In there. And we will catch you next time.
Super Show is brought to you by the Techno Funk Boy. Follow us on Twitter at Techno Funk Boy, on Facebook at the Techno Funk Boy, and sign up for our email list at technofunkboy.com. Also look for us on Spotify, iTunes, and Amazon for music. If you are so inclined, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast catcher. If you are not so inclined, you are obviously some sort of villain trying to conquer the world. Unowned music and gameplay clips are used for educational and critical purposes. Thank you for listening. Keep gaming. Unless you have responsibilities that need to be done at this time, then you can game later.